Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. A leader in the disability community says the End of Life Options Act puts disabled people at greater risk of being coerced into seeking assisted suicide. Riley Spreadbury with the Disability Resource Center in Joliet spoke with Spotlight after testifying before a state Senate committee against the pro-suicide legislation. Ms. Spreadbury sustained a spinal cord injury when she was 12 years old and once contemplated suicide. Riley, as a member of the disabled community, what are your concerns about this legislation?
My concerns are that, of course, not every disabled person is terminally ill, but every terminally ill person, in my opinion, is disabled, right? So this is inherently a disability issue. And I think when you look at the way the medical community often looks at people with disabilities and kind of society at large, there's a lot of stigma and a lot of biases against like the quality of life that a disabled person might have. And so my concern is that when something like physician-assisted suicide is legalized, then the physician's bias toward the quality of life of a disabled person will influence sort of their willingness to sort of sign off on getting this prescription.
One of the proponents of this legislation suggested that not everyone in the disability community is opposed to this. She inferred that the opposition is really smaller than they maintain. What do you say?
I would say that the disability community, like every national disability community that has stated an opinion on assisted suicide, has opposed it. And I do think that that is sort of a good indicator, not to say that the disability community is a monolith, but then also disabled people as well are influenced by society's understanding of disability. And most, if not all, chronic and terminal illnesses are going to cause disabilities. And I think the top like five reasons that were cited in the Oregon report shows that pain is not one of them. It's always like loss of autonomy. I'm afraid of being a burden to the family. Those are disability issues. Those are 100% disability issues. I would say that when people say, well, oh, not all people with disabilities oppose it, I would say, well, why? What is the reason that they're not opposing the bill? And I think it might be because of their own internalized like loss, like fear of loss of autonomy or fear of becoming a burden or fear of losing the abilities that you currently have.
Riley, for people in the faith community, such as myself, we need to have more empathy for the disabled community. How could we help the disabled community make a decision to keep on living?
So I think, I guess, coming from kind of my own personal experience with acquiring a disability and wanting to die because of it, I think the thing that helps me is knowing about resources that are available. For example, having better in-home care and home and community-based care is, you know, really critical. And having people kind of destigmatize disability a little bit. So I think in regard to your question about the faith community, I would think it's a large community, right? So, and I think it has a lot of influence. And I think that influence being geared more towards the destigmatizing of disability, you know, not always just talking about disability as it relates to cure. I think that's a big issue that I've experienced, where people are a little bit more focused on the hope of a cure for disabilities, but instead maybe a little bit more about like inclusion and access. I think if going back to when I was younger and I acquired a disability, I think that if I had known right off the bat about all of the resources that were available, about how great your life could be with a disability, and about how there's so many different treatment options and all of these different things, I think I would have been less depressed and less sort of focusing on death, basically.
Well, you mentioned that at one point you considered suicide. How serious were you, and What changed your mind?
So I was pretty serious. I was young too. I was really young. I had a spinal cord injury when I was 12 years old. It used to be a higher level as well. And I relied on a ventilator to breathe. And I didn't really have any like disabled people that I was aware of, right? So I didn't see anyone with a disability like having this really great life, right? And so I'm just like sitting in the hospital, and that sort of, so yeah, I mean, that was the thing I wanted. And I would literally ask my parents, like, because I mean, at the time also I physically couldn't kill myself if I wanted to, right? So instead I would just ask for it, right? Like I just wanted to die so bad. And so I guess I would say I was quite serious about it. Eventually, I met a lot of other people with disabilities, and I started getting like access to resources and treatment, and learned how to be more independent, and also learned that like having a disability does not necessarily mean that you're a burden, and that having assistance is not a bad thing, and that there's a lot of resources out there if you, you know, look for them. I think that really changed my mind.
Wow. We just met, but I'm sure glad you're alive.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Me too.
The people who are pushing this suicide legislation, maybe the idea in the back of their mind, well, medical advancements are a long way off. How would you respond to that?
Yeah, I think that, one, we know that medical diagnoses and prognoses have been wrong before, lots of times. And also, just like medical advancements, I think sometimes come out of the woodwork and you don't expect it. There's a particular story, and forgive me because I don't remember the girl's name. She had spinal muscular atrophy, and she decided to go through with assisted suicide. And after that, like within like, I believe it was like a year after she had died, the FDA approved for a treatment for spinal muscular atrophy that stops the progression in some cases. And that was an irreversible decision, right? Like, I mean, she is no longer with us now, and it's devastating. And I do think that people around this bill, I don't think it's a malicious bill. Like, I don't think people are doing it to be malicious. I think it's more from a place of hurt and fear and misinformation.
Misguided?
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to backtrack. You said you ask your parents regularly to let you die.
Mm-hmm.
Did they say or do something to help convince you otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, they definitely believed that I was, maybe even if they didn't believe it in within themselves, they definitely expressed that I can still live a, you know, full and good life. And they have always been really big advocates for me. And so I think they didn't want me to give up or like have this idea that like I couldn't have a life worth living. And, you know, they were really supportive of me becoming really independent and as independent as possible. And I think all of that, and like they wanted me to be like involved, and they wanted me to go back to school, and all of those things like influenced my decision to, I guess, I choose life and be happy. And I do want to point out, like, there was an initial time where right after my spinal cord injury, where when I was on like a ventilator and like my future wasn't guaranteed. And then later on, like obviously I wasn't terminal, but I was still like requesting and wanting to die. But, and I guess I'm just wanting to point out that I do recognize that my experience may be different from a lot of people who are proponents of this bill. But I think by and large, like having more robust palliative care resources, home and community-based support.
Do you feel that this legislation, they call it the End of Life Options Act, they don't like to call it pro-suicide legislation.
Yes.
Puts your life at risk?
Yeah, I think that when you start with a bill like this, one of the testimonies, I don't remember her name, but she was talking about how it there are cases in Colorado of individuals with anorexia being given the prescription for the lethal medication to end their life. And I think that really, really points to the whole slippery slope argument. And I know a lot of people don't like that argument, but I think it's true. I think the bill, I've read it multiple times, and they say it's very narrow, but I would disagree. It says a terminal illness that with a prognosis of 6 months or less. And that's up to the doctor's discretion. And clearly in Colorado, they determined that someone with anorexia who was resistant to treatment because of their mental health condition, but was still technically, you know, able to communicate and express their opinions eloquently, that they were a good fit for this. So yeah, I think it risks anyone who may one day encounter either a terminal illness or an illness or disability that may not even be what I would define as terminal. I think it can affect anyone. Anything with the disability community affects everyone, because anyone can become disabled at any time.
Well, I'm getting old, okay? As my white hair testifies, and I have a 95-year-old mother, and I could see where insurance companies one of these days will say, you're very costly, and maybe you would be better off taking these pills or whatever. Are we headed there if this legislation passes?
I definitely worry for that. We live in a medical system that's for profit. So, yeah, I think that that's definitely a concern.
Yeah. And I've heard the argument that, well, this bill seems tightly written. There's not a whole lot of loopholes there now. But they could come back and, what, expand it to cover more or redefine what terminal means?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, well, one, there's just proof that that's happening in other states. I think we can clearly see that if it's happening in other states, why would Illinois not have that be a risk? And I think that not only is there that proof, but even just as the bill is written right now, I think the fear is not amendments. The fear is literally just the how people are interpreting it, how doctors are interpreting it.
What message should we use to give to them and to our family and friends who might say, well, this is a good thing?
When I first read the bill, I was in favor of it, actually.
Really?
I was. And I work at a Center for Independent Living. And so when they came out and opposed it, I was like, oh, let me read this. And when I heard that, you know, every national disability organization that has stated an opinion on it has opposed the bill, I was like, well, you know, I'm really involved in disability politics. I should really look into this. And so I read it and I realized the reason that I was sort of not opposing it is because of that idea of compassion at the end of life. But I think that compassion can exist with palliative care and pain medication and access to resources, especially because if medical advancements happen, you know, you haven't made an irreversible decision. And honestly, I think just telling your lawmakers what your concerns are, I think a lot of lawmakers, and I think if they're reading the bill and it gives them pause, maybe they'll vote no for now.
You think if this legislation is defeated, that they'll come back again?
Yes.
If this bill passes and becomes law, you talked about the slippery slope, but what's it do for the mindsets of other legislatures and other states?
Well, I mean, clearly we've seen that, you know, Oregon, I believe, passed this bill in 1997, and they, as well as Washington, D.C., have followed suit. So, I mean, you know, the more states that support it, I'm sure the more commonplace it'll become.
But if we stop it here?
I hope so. And I hope that maybe then there's still a lot of other states that are interested in the bill, but hopefully, or interested in bills like this. But hopefully more and more people will become more aware. It has been shown that once people are educated about the bill and everything that it entails, more people are likely to oppose it.
You know, there's opposition from some unlikely sources like the Chicago Tribune, and some of the medical societies are not on board with this. Mm-hmm. And you're opposed to it. Do you think that there's a kind of a silent majority on this?
Like a silent majority of people that are actually opposing it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that a lot of people might actually just not have a stance, like they haven't really thought about it. And then when they hear about it just in passing, like, oh, assisted suicide, like, oh, when someone's really, really sick and in pain. Well, yeah, of course, that makes sense. And then, like, I don't think it's really thought of much deeply after that. But when you are educated more about the top five reasons aren't pain, and it's not like someone just like suffering, and well, once you kind of become more aware of all of those sort of different details, I think more people then become opposed. But yeah, I don't know. I think the more people, while I don't know if it's like a silent majority, I definitely think that the more people that are aware of it and like aware of the details of it would be more likely to oppose.
I'm just afraid this is going to help normalize even more death. And what's the big deal?
I don't know specifically about that. I just know that my concern would be essentially killing off patients who are really complicated to treat.
Yeah. Complicated to treat, costly to treat.
Yeah.
And at times, let's face it, sometimes a burden. But we have to get around that.
There are some examples of by the financial burden or a physical burden or something like that. The more resources we have and the more spread out those resources are, the less it's put on one person, like one family member caring for one person. Well, if there's home and community-based care, that person's going to be much less of a burden because there's more support. I don't think anyone is inherently a burden. I think everyone in the community needs to, like you said, care for your neighbor. Community-based care.
Chip in.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
All right. Riley, how do people get in contact with you and your organization?
The Disability Resource Center is located in Joliet. It's a center for independent living. If you live in Will or Grundy County and you need resources and it pertains to disability in any way, you can go to our website, which is drcjoliet.org.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you being a voice for life.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Thanks.
God bless. Riley Spreadbury with the Disability Resource Center in Joliet. Please pray for Riley and for the defeat of the Pro-Suicide End-of-Life Options Act, State Senate Bill 9 and Illinois House Bill 1328, and ask your state lawmakers to vote no on this anti-life legislation. For lawmaker names and phone numbers, click Officials Finder on the IllinoisFamily.org homepage. Now, after timeout, a brief interview with State Representative Adam Niemerk about the End-of-Life Options Act and other pending legislation.
Some good news. This is Ken Ham, author of the unique daily apologetics devotional, Ken Ham Daily. Last year, it was announced that one book had experienced a massive increase in sales, and that book was the Bible. Last year, Bible sales increased by over 20%, and much of that growth was fueled by first-time buyers. So if you or someone you know is brand new to the Bible, where should you start? Well, in Genesis. Read Genesis chapters 1 through 11 for the foundational history of who God is, who we are, why our world is such a mess. Then go to the Gospel of John to meet Jesus and discover the answer to our sin problem. It's wonderful news that people are interested in God's Word because it changes lives for eternity.
Subscribe for free daily email insights from Ken Ham at AnswersRadio.com and listen again at AnswersRadio.com.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. Following the recent homeschool cherry pie rally in Springfield, I spoke briefly outside the state capitol building with State Representative Adam Niemerk. The Republican lawmaker who serves the 102nd Illinois House District weighed in on the Pro-Suicide End-of-Life Options Act, a bill to decriminalize prostitution, and on the Homeschool Act, House Bill 2827. If enacted, it could lead to state control of home education.
Well, it's absolutely ridiculous. It's a situation where homeschooling represents freedom, an opportunity, and ultimately parental rights. Parental rights is a very big deal in my district, and that's something people really care about. So for the state of Illinois, the bad idea factory behind me to try to regulate homeschooling is not going to fly in my district.
You're going to vote no on this, and you're working with other lawmakers to encourage them to vote no.
Oh, absolutely. I'm having conversations across the aisle. I sit on the education committee, so I'm talking to legislators on the education committee, also talking to Republicans about getting ideas on how to kill this bad piece of legislation. I'm working with the Senate Republican caucus on trying to kill this legislation. And we really need to put the brakes on this, because this is really the nose of the camel getting under the curtain, so to speak, or the tent, and it could lead to a lot more regulation in the state of Illinois. And ultimately, that's what this is about. This is about power and control from the Democrats to try to regulate homeschooling, because they know it's successful, they know these kids are smart, and they understand that 70% of the kids in the public education system can't read or write, and we're spending $24,000 per pupil. So homeschooling is effective, and we must defend it.
Well, that's bad enough, but we've got a couple of other really bad bills. One of them is a pro-suicide bill. Boy, we've reached the point, we just don't want to abort babies. We want to kill the elderly, the infirmed, and what have you.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a very, very bad bill. It's a very bad piece of legislation. And I'm Catholic, and you know, I am very, very pro-life. That's the reason that I ran for office, is my pro-life ideology and what I stand for as a Catholic. So to see this legislation come up, to see the Democrats want to end life, this building behind me, it's all about ending life, it seems like sometimes, and this bill is very bad. I'll be opposed to this physician-assisted suicide, and I value life.
Yeah, what do we need to tell our lawmakers when we give them a call about this legislation? What should we say to them?
That everybody deserves life, that life is very important and valued, that just because these folks may be towards the end of their life doesn't mean that it doesn't have value. It has value. Miracles happen. You never know what's in store for you down the road. You never know what God's going to do. So let's not take life. Let's preserve it.
And then there is pro-prostitution legislation. They want to decriminalize sex work, is what they like to call it. They don't like to call it prostitution. And with the end goal to legalize prostitution. This is so bad on so many levels. Sends a wrong message to kids and what have you.
It's terrible. Absolutely terrible. The Democrats have a $55 billion budget. We're $3.2 billion in the hole on budget. We have a $3.2 billion deficit. And they call them revenue enhancements here in Springfield. They're tax increases. That's what this is. So rather than cutting regulation, cutting taxes, cutting waste, balancing our books, the Democrats, to try to raise revenue, are talking about legalizing prostitution. What world do we live in? This is absolutely ridiculous.
Liquor stores, marijuana shops, gambling in our restaurants, and now prostitution right on Main Street. It's terrible.
Yeah, if we start putting family values first, putting the family first, you'll be surprised at how fast this state can turn around.
Amen. All right, thank you. State Representative Adam Niemerg, call your state lawmakers. Ask them to vote no on suicide, prostitution, and government control of homeschooling. For lawmaker names and phone numbers, go to IllinoisFamily.org and click Officials Finder. Please support the work of the Illinois Family Institute. All donations are tax deductible. And tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy, stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.